Oh, that's right. It's time for Meet Me at the Diner, and you are in for a real treat this afternoon. We have the one, the only Nat Chandler right here sitting across the table from me, as well as his dad, Tom Chandler, is here with us. We had an interesting conversation about Tom here. He used to go over and every once in a while sing on WCRS in the old days with Doris Rush playing the piano. For anybody that remembers that, I have the voice sitting right here at the table with us this afternoon. But Nat is going to be here Friday night. He's doing a concert. It's going to be all about Broadway, and he's going to be having a good time doing that. So we are real pleased to have you here this afternoon, Nat.
Thank you so much, Ann Eller. I'm happy to be here. Thank you.
Well, you know, it's neat. I have interviewed a lot of the greats that have left Greenwood and gone on and become big stars, from Stacy Robinson to Keith Jameson to, who else were we talking about?
Bo Hopkins,
that's right.
Well, it's about time you've had me.
Absolutely. I'm so glad you're sitting here today.
Thank you.
So how long have you been back in Greenwood this time?
I arrived Tuesday.
Tuesday.
Yeah.
And the weather's been terrible.
Well, I thought I was getting out of New York just in time to get south for March 1st, because I remember March 1st, the weather, you could count on it being great. I thought, well, the 27th of February, it's going to be fantastic. But I've been watching the weather, and it looks bad.
Yeah, last year we had Valentine's Day totally snowed out last year.
Goodness.
Yes, and this year, although we made it through Valentine's Day, we have had some yucky weather, and I'm a little tired of it. I'm ready for some sunshine and weather. But you were down in Florida just doing a concert, weren't you?
Yeah, that was beautiful. I was down in the Naples area, Fort Myers, and I stayed on Marco Island. It was gorgeous. One of the nice perks of singing in Florida, you get that weather in the wintertime.
So what were you doing? What were you singing down there?
I was doing one of the Rat Pack concerts that I do. We recreate the Sands Hotel in Las Vegas, the routines in the 60s of the guys, and we perform with Frank, Sammy, and Dean.
And what role do you play?
Dean Martin.
Mm-hmm. Oh, still my heart.
Oh, yes. Just trying to have some fun, folks. That's all.
Can I have another drink, please?
Yes, exactly.
My glass is empty.
What? Can we have a drink? You are drinking. Oh, is that my hand?
There you go. Exactly. You know, that was such a unique time in our history. And, you know, you look at it today, and we would no more do the drinking and the partying and the stuff that they did on the stage. I mean, there are people that are wasted on stage, but not to the type of things that Dean Martin and Sinatra and all did.
Yeah, I think that some of that, there was kind of a carefully crafted persona. Maybe they didn't do quite as much drinking on stage as they appeared to do, but yeah, it was a much more naive time, and things had not achieved the kind of political correctness of today's culture. And a lot of the jokes from the Rat Pack seem corny to people now, because we've seen it all. But it was, I think it was a reflection of the time. It was that era of the jet set.
Flying was such an experience.
Yes.
I mean, you know,
well,
you got dressed up to fly.
Yeah, and commercial jet travel is just about as old as I am. That's to say, it began in earnest in the late 50s. And Sinatra's Come Fly With Me album was just quintessential jet set.
Exactly.
You know, there were smaller oceans, and people could really get away and escape or dream about it.
Exactly. And they dressed nice. That's
yes.
The thing. They dressed nice. I just thought I'd clarify that one, because today, who knows what you're going to be sitting next to in today's world when you fly.
That's true. A lot more people flying, too.
Exactly. So I guess you can almost equate flying today almost like bus travel. You know, bus travel was, you know, when you flew back in the 50s and the 60s, you were really upper crust.
Yes.
Yes.
Oh yeah, it was. I think that jet set were the people who took first and best advantage of the fact that they could get from A to B much faster, and so a trip to China, for instance, was doable.
Sure.
And
and we had stewardesses.
Yes, exactly.
Wild and sexy.
Yes, exactly. Catch me if you can.
Exactly. Yeah. So it was a whole different world. I bet you have a blast doing that.
It is so much fun, and we love audiences' participation and how much fun they have while we're doing those shows. They were amazing guys. I did a one-man show called Dino. Last year in Philadelphia at the Walnut Street Theater. It was about the premise of the show. It was a concert that really took place one night on a snowbound night in Philadelphia. It was the Great Blizzard of 1978. And Dean and his pianist made it, but his gold diggers and the band didn't. And Dean, who was really buttoned up, he didn't talk a lot about, you know, real things. But that night he went off road and talked about his wives and his experiences and what he was really like, his upbringing in Ohio and Steubenville, and it was sold out for 3 months. We had a blast. I sang, oh gosh, you know, 20 or 30 of his big hits, and I learned a lot doing that, which I bring to the Rat Pack, which is more of a big general look at they're all the guys' greatest hits.
Sure. It is. I have not seen your Rat Pack show, but I've seen two different ones. One in Branson, Missouri, and one, actually, I saw it twice in Las Vegas. I think it was the Olympic. The Greek Olympic. We had to go to this kind of rundown place to see it. But once you got inside, it was just like you were in another world.
People love the Rat Pack. And I'm doing this concert again next week up in Connecticut and with the Ridgefield Symphony Orchestra. What distinguishes this particular Rat Pack performance is that all of our band charts for this great music is been expanded for symphony orchestras. And so orchestras have us on their pop series. And it's an awful lot of fun. And it's amazing. A reporter for a paper will go, why, you know, some of our young people in the office were going, why are they doing the Rat Pack? And I said, you can't imagine. The Rat Pack is kind of iconic for all ages.
Sure.
Yeah.
Well, it's kind of like so many groups. The Elvis.
Yeah.
You know, look at all the Elvis impersonators out there, folks, that just keep things rolling right along.
Exactly. And I like to make the distinction, but we're not really impersonators, but we like to call it a tribute concert.
Mm-hmm.
And we do lend ourselves to some of their mannerisms, but
I can see you as Dean.
Yeah, can you?
Yes,
okay.
Yes.
Okay,
yes, I can see you as Dean Martin.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. All right. Hey, we are here with Nat Chandler. He is going to be in concert Friday night right here at Lander University. What time does it start? 7:30. We understand they only have a few tickets. You are almost sold out.
Yes, isn't that wonderful?
It is wonderful. So if you'd like to get tickets, you should call over there, 227-8744. That's 227-8744. So tickets are $37.50. That is a bargain. I guess you're giving us a break back here in Greenwood, huh?
Oh, yeah. You know, I have nothing to do with the price. I think it's the Lander. I think it's the Greenwood Performing Arts that's are the one that are giving everybody the break.
Well, that's great. Hey, we'll be right back. Don't you go away.
Gold. Gold. More precious than any other time in history. Do you have gold? Do you need cash? Then bring it to SFG. That's Sharp Facets Gallery, 1220 Bypass 72, Greenwood. Telephone 229-6613. Don't forget, we buy diamonds too. Paying the highest prices for your gold and diamonds at Sharp Facets Gallery.
Oh, that's right. We are right here with Nat Chandler. He is going to be performing Friday night, one of the greats that comes home and does good things for our community. I think that's awesome. And he wanted to play a song. We're going to play a song that he has sung. It's on a CD. We're not going to get him to sing right here in studio because we probably don't have all the accompaniment needed to do this. But, Nat, you said there's a real interesting story behind the song we're going to hear, Tell My Father.
Yeah, well, when I was doing The Scarlet Pimpernel on Broadway, written by Frank Wildhorn, Wildhorn had two other shows playing on Broadway at the same time. It was a wonderful thing for him. One was Jekyll and Hyde, and the other from which this song comes was a show called The Civil War. And this song takes place at the Battle of Antietam, where two boys who were friends before the war, one more blue, one more gray, the Union soldier was mortally wounded on the battlefield, and as he lay in the arms of his Confederate friend, he asked his friend to get a message back to his father. And that's the name of the song, Tell My Father.
Wow. Okay, Lindsay, can we hear Tell My Father?
Thank you.
Bravo. Bravo. Very beautiful song.
Thank you. It is beautiful, I think. Thank you.
It is. And
that's going to be on the concert, Anne.
Is it? Yeah. Wow. Okay. Yeah. That sounds great. You know, so many times you don't get to tell your father or tell your parents.
Yeah. To be able to say goodbye.
Exactly.
And the fact that this was a one more blue, one more gray kind of story makes it even more poignant.
Exactly. Wow. Good, 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 good. You know, that's what makes this show so interesting. Last week we had Mac Arnold on, an old blues singer, singing Don't Scorch My Cornbread Woman. And today we have Tell My Father by Nat Chandler. That's why people tune in, Nat. We just cover everything here.
I love it. Yeah. I love it all. Yeah.
That's great. So, you know, I've got to ask you, you grew up in Greenwood, as you've written eloquently here. I don't know whether you wrote this. I understand you did some journalism type and you write some. But we had three TV stations.
Yes. Yes. Oh, I did write that. Yeah. That was about my growing up in Greenwood.
Yeah. Three stations. And we had Walter Cronkite. God, that was back in the dark ages, wasn't it?
Well, it was the dark ages, I guess. I everything is relative, though. But yeah, dark
well,
ages.
You know, you just look at that, though, and you look at what type of growth and the explosion of things that happened during that time and further going on. And now you look at the world today, and we have what is almost would be considered total chaos.
Well, yes. And, well, all these forms of communication are everywhere. You have hundreds of channels instead of three. And,
but you don't see any more than you had when you had three.
Exactly. That's the irony of it all, right?
Isn't it? Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But, you know, you said you grew up here in Greenwood. What do you think was the single most important thing to you growing up? As you look back, what was the glue that pulled everything together for you?
Well, I mentioned that in that article. There's that African proverb, it takes a village. And I was really brought up by the village of Greenwood. My parents principally at the top, and then my church and the leaders of our church, musically and otherwise. There was community theater, where Donald McKellar was a big part of that. And when he left for a few years, and Bill Suber was there for me, I had piano teachers, and everybody was my coaches. I felt like they were all personally doing their best to cultivate my life, to give me a solid foundation to spring from.
Sure. And as you sprung from it, what did you think you wanted to be when you grew up?
Well, as we were talking a little while ago, I was thinking of going to the College of Charleston with a journalism major. I was the editor of my newspaper at Greenwood High School and business manager of the annual. I was very interested in writing. But Furman offered me more money to come to study music. And basically...
And the business manager out of you won out, right?
Yes, exactly. That part won out. And as I got to Furman and began to study music, I knew immediately I had found my niche.
Wow. You know, I wonder do you ever think about what if you had gone to the College of Charleston and gone into journalism?
Sometimes. I rarely wonder that. I'm not prone to regrets and
right.
That sort of thing. But I do, in recent years, I've started to freelance writing, and I really enjoy that. But my musical talents have done so well for me. I feel like I made the right decision.
You've been very blessed. Hey, I tell you what, let's hear South Carolina Radio News, and we'll be right back.
McDonald's presents Confessions of an Ex-Hipster.
I loved cappuccinos, so I put on an itchy turtleneck and grew a goatee. But before I knew it, I was into French films, indie rock, and not bathing. Luckily, I got help from McDonald's McCafe cappuccinos. Now I'm watching football, wearing khakis, even high-fiving again. Thank you, McDonald's.
New McCafe mochas, lattes, and cappuccinos from McDonald's. With fresh ground espresso and real steamed milk, it's all the coffee, hold the attitude. At participating McDonald's.
Visit your local McDonald's in Greenwood and Abbeville today.
Oh, that's right. We're right back here. Nat Chandler right here sitting across from me, as well as his dad, Tom Chandler. Now, your dad, Tom, is going to be singing, I understand, Friday night on the stage with you.
Yes, he is. That's a tradition we've had for the last three or four concerts that I've done here. Okay. Yes, he is.
And is he ready, Nat?
I don't know that Dad is ever ready, but no, he's gonna be great. We've picked out a wonderful duet from the side-splitting Broadway musical Spamalot, and so we have a silly duet called "I'm All Alone," and he's hilarious in it. And I play the straight man, and Dad plays the comic sidekick. And it's funny.
That's great. That's great. Well, I've just been entertained here by one of the songs. What was that? Dust Off the Bible? Is that what it was? Yeah, you were just, he was just singing off the air with us. And he knows some great songs. Now, did he influence you growing up hearing
all
this music?
Yeah. Of course. You know, on Saturday mornings for the chores, we'd wake up with Beethoven blaring. And Dad is a great music lover and knows a lot about music, and our musical language is a wonderful thing for father and son to share. Mm-hmm. And he made sure we got a big knowledge of a big spectrum of music growing up. And on car trips and family trips, we would harmonize away. And
back in the day, you did that. People don't do that. I
know.
Don't think anymore.
I don't think so either. We were in the old Ford Country Squire with the no seat belts and the back window down and smelling exhaust and singing the most exotic harmonies.
And you survived.
We survived.
Yes, such as it is.
Yes, it is amazing. It's amazing. But you know, Dad would say, now, Dad would really build my confidence by saying, well, that doesn't have to work at the heart. He gets the harmonies naturally, but he'd tell, you know, he'd give my mother and my brother and my sister specific harmonies to sing. And
so you just you had a good time. Now, of course, you performed at Greenwood Community Theater.
Yes.
Of course, Donald McKellar was there.
Oh, yeah, wonderful Donald, yes.
Bigger
than life.
May
he rest in peace. He was the greatest influence. Bigger than life, wonderful personality, and perfect for what he did for Greenwood. And I must say—he did so much for Greenwood through the years.
He did. He did. Yeah. So, what was the first play that you were actually in? Do you still remember?
Yes, it was. It was The King and I, 1966.
Okay.
My friends Tommy Stoddard, who's a dentist
goodness,
in
yeah,
town,
right?
and Barry Parham, Dr. Parham's son, and many people were in that show, and it had quite an effect on me. My piano teacher Ann Arrington was the head of the. She played the organ. Barbara Parham played the organ. Ann Arrington played the piano, and there was a drummer. And I can't remember his name, but I was only six.
They're doing pretty good for six here.
Well,
now. Yeah.
But my first professional job when I moved to New York was singing the role of Lunta in The King and I with Yul Brynner. That was my first professional job.
Well, do you say about that? Is that kismet or what?
That is kind of kismet. That kind of synchronicity in life is, I think, very faithful.
When you got that role, what did you say? I mean, what went rushing through your mind, if you can remember?
I told the producer, I said, this is so great. The first role I ever played was in The King and I in community theater, and now this is my first professional job. And I got down on my knees and kissed his ring for hiring me. I got my union card and a big salary right off the bat after moving to New York. So
wow.
Yeah. It was a very fortunate thing.
That's unbelievable. How often do you think that happens in life, where the very first role that you played in a community theater would be your first really professional role?
Yeah, I don't know. I probably not often.
Right. Probably the odds are against that one. But and you went on and did now, first off, how did you, when you moved to New York, Did you have money in your pocket? I mean, how did this happen?
I had a little money. I had a little money. Not much, but I had done my graduate work at Northwestern University. I'd lived in Chicago for like 3 years and worked as a singer, and I worked in a restaurant and the general things, of course. And I moved to New York and with my suitcases and got a job in a restaurant. And I was singing Happy Birthday at one of those fine restaurants. I worked at great restaurants. I worked for George Lang at the Café des Artistes and for the McNally brothers up at the Café Luxembourg. But
so you didn't take just any restaurant job.
That's right. I went for the top.
First class.
Well, yeah, the business manager of the annual, you know, I knew the tips would be higher as higher the food was.
Right.
But
higher
was,
the food chain.
Yes. Uh-huh. But I got my start singing Happy Birthday to someone who said, you should really sing for my agent. And so I went in and sang for the agent. They sent me out to this King and I audition. And that's how that happened. But it was a real interesting and fortunate confluence of events.
Now, how often does that happen, Nat?
Well, I don't know. Lana Turner was found at the lunch counter. Right.
Yes.
So I don't know. It happens. But you got to be in it to win it. You know, if I weren't in New York and pursuing, I was singing the Russian choruses at the Metropolitan Opera. I did Boris Godunov and Khovanshchina there, and working in a restaurant in the neighborhood, sang for an agent. Started sending me out, and I got started hitting right away. So
how long was that before you moved to New York and signed a contract?
It was about 6 months.
That's not bad.
Yeah,
That's not bad at all.
Not bad.
Now, what did your parents think about you moving to New York?
Well, they knew that I was on my own journey, I think. you know, they didn't have much to say, and they always gave me their blessing. They knew I had my own mind, and they raised me that way. You know, after my college education was paid, anything above that, a graduate school, wherever I wanted to go, that was on my dime. And so I went there as my own man. But I do remember calling them and saying, "Well, I'm about to go for my run in Central Park," and mother was like, "Oh." Be careful. Oh, you know. So they were nervous, of course, I'm sure.
You never had your dad singing, "Won't you come home, Nat Chandler?"
No, but that's one of his favorite songs. Oh, you should really get him up here to sing for you one of these.
Yeah, exactly. That would be fun. Well, we're going to talk more with Nat Chandler as we go on towards the top of the hour. We do have him in studio till 5. He is going to be in concert Friday night over there at Lander University with GPA. That's Greenwood Performing Arts. They only have a few tickets left. So if you'd like to get some tickets, give them a call. 227-8744. That's 227-8744. You will not be disappointed. And not only his dad, but he's got some other family that's going to be in the show. So, hey, we'll be right back. Don't you go away.
They say every kiss begins with... But at Sharp Facets Gallery, every smooch begins with Sharp Facets Gallery. Which do you want? A little kiss or a big smooch? I'll bet a big smooch. So shop Sharp Facets Gallery, 1220 Bypass 72, Greenwood, for rock bottom prices and smoochable results.
Hey, I'm Ann Eller right here with Nat Chandler. Boy, we've had a lot of conversation on the air, off the air, and still having a good time. You know, Nat, we've just been talking about growing up today versus growing up back in the day, and how it was that, you know, going out on your own was such a, it was a big thing, but it was something you relished, the idea of going out there, conquering the world.
That's right. And it was something that was expected of us as children.
Right.
That we would, after high school, we would get our college education aided by our parents, and then we'd get out in the world and do it. I think my parents would have welcomed me back in Greenwood, of course. And but they basically want for my happiness and success wherever I am. And sure. So, but if I moved back to Greenwood, I would have been expected to, you know, pull my own
sure.
my weight. And yeah. But as it was, I had fish to fry elsewhere.
Yeah.
And
that's what I guess anything you would have changed about your life?
I don't think so. Let's not say that there was.
Right.
But, you
oh,
know,
okay.
I think
nothing you're going to share with us on the air.
Well, you know, maybe there might have been a turn or two that I might have done slightly differently,
right?
But basically, no. Yeah, I've lived a life that's good. I've traveled each and every highway.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So what would you tell somebody, a young person or if somebody's grandchild or something wants to get into music today? Tough, tough field, isn't it?
It is a tough field. And I tell kids if they have to do it, do it. If it's something that, you know, you kind of doing in a halfway, it's not a good thing. There are more practical careers to choose. But if you're compelled by necessity to get into it, then give it your all. And
what do you think about some of the discoveries, how kids, they are kids, are getting discovered on YouTube?
I think it's phenomenal. I think it's great. I think it's wonderful exposure. You know, I think we had the Ted Mack Amateur Hour and... You know, a few of the Ed Sullivan Show.
We didn't have a really, really big show tonight.
we didn't have American Idol and The Voice and all these other vehicles for young people to show what they can do. But, I grew up singing in the choir from a very young, and I was occasionally given solo parts, but I think I would say I paid my dues and mm-hmm. was well. Now kids think they look at The Voice and they think, okay,
I think
I'll sing. That's me. I'll go do that without having had, you know,
the background
or the training. And occasionally it could happen that way. But I think it's some of the YouTube exposure can be great. But I wonder if sometimes that's a one-trick pony. It's interesting to sustain that. It's one thing to have a flash 15 seconds of fame or 15 minutes of fame or a lifetime. Which is better, the runner that runs the fastest or the runner that can run the longest without...
Well, that brings us to another subject, because you are a runner.
Yes, I am. I am.
And what made you get into running? I mean, you were talking about running in Central Park. And
Yeah. Well, I ran track in high school. I got out of playing football after a while, and I ran track, and I found I enjoyed the long distance run, and I still run about 25 miles a week, and it keeps
in New York, yeah.
And I've been here on my parents' guest passes at the YMCA. My parents are both athletes, and they go to the Y and do the elliptical and do senior yoga. And they take me on their guest pass, and I run and watch them, and I guess I'm a chip off the old block. But I love running. I love, you see nature running outside, and it keeps your brain and your body balanced. And
gives you good breathing when you're singing.
Absolutely.
Yeah, that's true.
Because a singer really is an athlete in a way, the way you have to support and, I you have to stay in shape.
You do. Now, just who would you say who would be someone as a singer? Doesn't matter, opera or whatever, that you idolize. Who would you like to perform with one day that you haven't?
Well, I love Placido Domingo. I love listening to Luciano Pavarotti in the house when he was alive, you know, in the Met Opera.
Okay, you're not going to have that opportunity.
I know,
okay.
I'm not going to have that opportunity. I don't know. I've sung with a lot of great, great people through the years. You know, in my career, I sang Lancelot with Goulet and as King Arthur and Shirley Jones playing Nettie Fowler and Howard Keel and They were wonderful to sing with. I don't know who would be somebody I'd love to sing with. I don't know, voices I love, like Randy Travis's voice. I love that voice. And, yeah.
I just was curious. You know, yeah. Sometimes you have someone that you say, oh, if I could only sing with them or only
meet
them. Or...
I don't particularly have that kind of dream going on.
Okay. Well, Shirley Jones.
Oh, yeah.
How about that?
Well, it was really fun. I had, I was on a cruise with the Theater Guild from New York. And on one side of my cabin was Patricia Neal, and the other side was Shirley Jones. And the stories those gals could tell.
Exactly.
But I did a show with Shirley in Boston, a carousel, where she played Nettie Fowler, the first time that she'd done the stage version of Carousel. And she played the Nettie Fowler role, of course. But she was great. Great person. Loved her. And so talented.
Was she at all eccentric?
Not eccentric at all, but Shirley was secure. She knew herself, and she had great stories, and she's a great lover of life.
That's cool. You know, I think that we can learn so much from fellow actors, broadcasters, whatever.
You know, interesting story she told me. When they were doing Carousel, she and Frank Sinatra who were doing Carousel, the movie. And Frank found out the first day of shooting they were doing this Todd Deo film process, and he had to do two scenes, shoot the scene twice. And he was famous for only one take.
Right.
So he quit. She got change and went down to the harbor at Booth Bay in Maine and called Gordon McRae, who was with his wife in Lake Tahoe, and said, can you get here to play Billy Bigelow? They had already done Oklahoma together. And he goes, give me 3 days. I need to lose 10 pounds. And he came, and they made the movie of Carousel together.
How about that?
Yeah. An interesting little anecdote. But that's one of the stories she told.
Yeah. I'll bet you that when you look back over your life and you think about coming from Greenwood and all the things that have people you've interacted with and met and everything, every once in a while, I bet you got to stop yourself and pinch yourself and say, did this really happen?
Yeah, I really do. I don't look back that much.
Right.
But sometimes because every career could go better at times, it's always a little bit of a roller coaster. And it is nice when you're in a any kind of bit of a lull to think about your experiences, what you have achieved
sure.
in life. Sure.
And so, you know, since you like to write and everything, and you've got all these great stories, any idea that you might write a book at some point?
Well, Anne, you've just put $1 million idea into my head.
Really?
Yes. You want to collaborate on it?
Sure, absolutely. No, that's great. I mean, you know, when you have stories like that, I mean, you know, these people, they're gone. Some of them, you know, it would be a fabulous book to have had the connections that you've had.
Yeah, I think that that's a great idea. And I think I'll give that some
thought
when my career starts slowing down.
When it starts slowing down.
Yeah.
Well, here's what you need to do. You need to, when you think about a story, though, you need to either write it down or have a little recorder and just, because, you know, when you sit down there and you go, okay, I'm ready to write, and you go,
what?
I don't have anything to talk.
Yes. What was I thinking about?
Exactly. So write down some of those ideas, jot them down, or get yourself a little recorder that you can put the stuff on. That would be terrific.
Yeah, thanks for that idea.
Yeah.
I'll share some royalties with you
eventually.
All right,
well, there you go. I'll just be back here in Greenwood saying, I knew Nat Chandler when. All right, well, Nat, I know you're looking forward to Friday night.
Now, I really am.
You have several people that are going to be in the show. It's not just you.
Right. My dad is going to be performing with me. And then in the second act, I have my niece, my nephew, Carly Bishop and Hobie Chandler, and then Mary Evan Giles, who is a senior at Lander University, beautiful soprano voice. And we're going to do a number from the current Broadway hit by Leonard Bernstein, On the Town.
On the Town.
Yes.
Wow.
And, yeah, it's beautiful.
Okay, so that'll be exciting to do that. It is a Friday night. You don't want to miss this show. If you haven't gotten your tickets, give them a call, 227-8744. That's 227-8744. That's Friday night, 7:30. Make sure you have a good one. Nat Chandler, thanks so much for coming out here today.
Anne, it's been a real pleasure. Thank you so much for having me, and I'll see you at the concert.
All right, sounds great. This is WCRS right here in Greenwood. Sure hope you're going to have a good one. Be careful out there. I was supposed to announce Piedmont Tech will be closing all campuses at 5 today. All evening classes are canceled for this afternoon. That's going to do it for us. This is WCRS right here in Greenwood. Bye-bye, everybody.